KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the Park City Board of Education meeting in regular session starting at 3 o'clock tomorrow, and then we'll immediately close the meeting to discuss candidates for the position of Park City Superintendent. In the position in the studio with an update, I have Superintendent Amber Conley. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the session opens at 3. They'll close it. Any idea when it will reopen?
Right. So the schedule right now is based around the consultant's schedule. So the anticipation is that they'll meet from 3 to 6 p.m. tomorrow to look at the semifinalists for the superintendent opening. And then they'll come back into open session, do the normal business with the consent calendar, and then move forward with policies that we need to be able to adopt and post.
Yeah. Will you be participating in the closed session?
I will not.
Okay. The plan then is to come out of this session with the top 3 to 5.
You know,
candidates?
I can say typically I haven't been completely well. First of all, I haven't been in the loop around this at all, which is normal. And so typically, though, what the consultants do is they go through the applications with the board. Then they help select anywhere from 3 to 6 candidates. They typically don't select more than 6 out of the pool. Again, I'm not sure how big the pool is, what types of candidates that there are. But I do know from a national level that there were several superintendent openings this year across the nation.
All right. Let's see. Has the school board decided if the school district will pay to have those semifinalists flown in to be interviewed face-to-face?
I'm not completely sure around that. I know that when I was interviewed 5 years ago, that they did pay for travel and lodging as a finalist.
Okay, and you were one of 3 finalists.
Correct.
At that point. Yeah. And then we had heard recently a discussion with the board had on open meetings, how the names of the semifinalists do have to be released. Is that going to be done voluntarily, do you know, or do I have to file a grammar request to get that information?
Again, typically those are, it's an exciting time for the district, and it would be a good time to be able to release those names. And I'm familiar enough with HYA, who are the consultants, that is their typical practice to do that. They do get approval from the candidates that, yes, your name is going to be released. So I do, I don't anticipate that you'll need a grammar.
Okay, so at this point in the game, I mean, if you're one of the top 3 to 5 people, I mean, it's you got to let your own home district know?
Yes, you do.
Yeah, so what does your schedule look like now between here and the end of May?
Right, so as I've stated before, the superintendent in Mesa, his last day is May the 25th. So 2 weeks ago, I spent some time down in Mesa starting to meet with the team, the community. I will be going back down next week for a couple days, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So when I'm not in the district, we have a point of contact for any emergencies. Ranges anywhere from Tim McConnell, HR director, to Todd Haber, someone at the cabinet level that is that emergency contact. I do anticipate going back down one more time for a week in May. And again, my position is also dependent on how fast the board can move with the superintendent appointee for the new superintendent.
Yes. When do you have to be in Mesa's superintendent chair?
Right. So, you know, they have requested that the sooner the better, of course, given that Dr. Cowan in Mesa is going to be leaving May the 25th. I have been committed to the district, as you know, to be able to transition the new superintendent. But my last day, as is June the 30th.
All right. And then you still have some vacation time if you wanted to go spend time there?
I do. You know, and that's, again, pretty typical of transitions when you look at superintendents transitioning, that they end up using most of their vacation time to do that.
All right. Let's see. And then will you be able to be available to help the new Park City superintendent?
You know, it is, and that's something that the Mesa board has been very gracious around, knowing that there's going to be a transition period and that I am committed to Park City, you know, and I think that's important. We're going to be keeping our home here in Park City, of course, love Park City, and we want the success of the school district. We have an incredible team that's getting excited for the new superintendent, and so it's important on my professionalism to make sure that there's as much transition as I can possibly give.
Yeah. Sounds like you could be walking into a wasp nest. So just given the situation with education, I mean, it's like I've been paying more attention to Arizona's school system since you've been appointed there. But it's like, I think they're one of the Arizona teachers are like at the bottom of the pile here for teacher pay.
They are the lowest paid and lowest funded. So it's interesting now being in three different states, Colorado, Utah, and Arizona, Colorado is a little bit different, but Utah and Arizona continue to say we're the lowest funded. But the way that Utah is funded for school districts is a completely different formula than Arizona. And what's happened in Arizona was some severe budget cuts, starting with the recession that they've never come back and fixed. And so when you look at their pay, they are the lowest paid in the nation. And when, you know, some of the starting pay is low 30s, and granted the cost of living is lower there, but still not poverty level expectations. I did see and have been in contact with, I did see, you know, of course, in the news that the governor has committed to some increases, close to the 10% increase. I also know that in the Mesa district that they're going to be going to an override, so basically a levy that will allow them to reach the capacity to be able to pay the teachers.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, what you're seeing is that you can't find teachers to teach, and what does that mean that class sizes then look like?
You know, it's in Arizona, it really ranges. Again, that's one of the things that I love about Park City. I mean, our class sizes in Park City are public school size, private school size. And when you look at some of the class sizes in Arizona, you know, they're in the high 30s for a teacher. And then, you know, you have older facilities as well.
Turning to another topic here, some new administrative changes were announced. Tell us about Tracy Evans. She's been tapped to replace Kathleen Einhorn as the new director of curriculum and learning.
Right. So Tracy is a talented educator. Her experience ranges from being an elementary teacher for, I believe, close to 15 years, then moving into administration, has been at Ecker Hill, I believe, for 9 years as the principal. And has just a tremendous background in curriculum and instruction, and has been placed as an interim basis for a year to fill in Dr. Einhorn's position, which is the Associate Superintendent of Teaching and Learning, which is curriculum, instruction, professional development for teaching.
So hers is just a temporary position?
It is. And, you know, this is something that with a new superintendent coming in that we wanted to make sure that the new superintendent is able to choose that cabinet level position. And Tracy graciously accepted that position.
So she'll go back to, or maybe not.
Right. So what we'll do is open up that position probably early spring next year. And if she, of course, wants to apply, can apply and interview. And if not, has commitment to go back to her current position.
And then her position at Ecker Hill will be replaced by whom?
Right. So right now, the assistant principal, Sam Salinas, again, who has years of experience in administration and both internationally and nationally, he will be on a one-year principal contract. And then so what we've also have done is posted for his position for a one-year, which is actually, when you look at the number of admin certificated employees that we have in the district, it's a great opportunity for many of our employees that may want to apply for that one-year contract.
All right. Another business. Oh, what about Tim McConnell's position?
Right. So
human resources.
Right. So Tim is eligible for retirement January of 2020, I believe.
Or 2019? 2020.
It's a year and a half.
Okay.
So he has another full year. And typically in that type of position, you start succession planning now and being able to, you know, look at candidates both internally and externally, get the word out both statewide and nationally. So that's, again, something that the board's going to have to look at and the new superintendent together.
All right. Let's see. Parley's Park is presenting their school improvement plan, known as a SIP. These are done then by each school at different board meetings.
Right. So all of the schools are doing their school improvement plan. It's part of our land trust monies, and it's a state requirement by code. So each school has their goals, has their school improvement plan for this next year that's directly aligned to reading and math goals.
All right. And then they have put a lot of emphasis on tiered learning plans. Can this be done if the district's budget isn't approved yet? So that could, because adding, we would require hiring more interventionists.
You know, so the trust lands are a completely different regulated funding source. And while it is under the governing board does have to approve the school improvement plans. So in reality, yes, it could be put on hold, but there are state regulated dates that these need to be approved and acknowledged. And that's why they're on this board meeting.
Okay. When does the board finalize the budget?
It is required for the board to have a submitted budget by June the 20th. We, of course, have been working through this with an increased timeline with anticipation of being able to recruit teachers and administrators at an earlier time.
Okay. Let's see. A number of policies for adoption and discussion. A school dropout plan. What's that?
New legislation requires what we call early warning systems to be in place. This is something that actually came out of last year's legislative session. So that is something that we need to be putting in place. Basically, let's look at our 6th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade. Are there students that have really high absentees, failing classes? And so it's an early warning system to prevent dropouts once they get to high school. The other thing along with that, and there's going to be even more changes given this legislative session, is around attendance. So we have a task force, chronic absenteeism task force, that recently started earlier this fall, based on that the juvenile court for truancy had been removed. And so the teeth in attendance, compulsory age attendance, had been removed. Well, now this legislative session, they've realized, wow, we have a major issue. While the court system may not have been the most effective, it's way more effective than what we have right now. So there's going to be another shift in putting it back into the courts.
All right, just wanted to mention, missing on the agenda is no public comment. Is that, that seems unusual.
It is a little unusual, certainly by law able to do that because of, you know, public comment is actually a courtesy to the public. However, with the schedule for the recruiters coming in and being in closed session with the board for close to 3 hours, the amount of policies and the school improvement plans that need approval, the board removed the public comment.
Okay. Also wanted to mention that the Utah School Board also published notice about a state report card showing some higher than national average for math, science, reading, and language arts, but still a big achievement gap than that the state school board would like to close. I know we've got that going on here in Park City as well. So are there examples of school districts closing that achievement gap, and what have they done to do that?
Right. So yes, there are examples. It is a very difficult task. You know, when you look at issues across the nation, we are one of the only public school systems across the globe that has equity and allows all students to participate in education. And that's the cornerstone of our nation. And when you look at children coming in, either monolingual or not having a strong base language, that's really where your academic achievement gap comes in. That's where your early learning, your preschool, your strong 0 to 3 interventions are so incredibly critical. I will say that Utah's outcomes for the funding are phenomenal. So you look at other states across the nation, and I'll use maybe Connecticut. Connecticut has tremendous outcomes, and then compare their outcomes to the amount of funding that they receive compared to ours. And we're holding our own with far less funding. And so I would say across the state, there are a couple districts that have made some significant gains. Cache County is one that their demographics have shifted, and they're making tremendous gains in closing that academic achievement gap. And we collaborate with them frequently. We're in the same curriculum consortium with them.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Two things. One, I just want to say thank you to our community partners. This last week was our spring break, and many times, you know, we have children that aren't traveling. And thank you to the Park City Library, to Basin Rec for offering free activities for our children that are here and keeping them safe. And then mark your calendar, May the 14th, 6 p.m., Frontline Blue Line, which is the partnership with law enforcement and parents. It's been extremely successful, both in North Summit and South Summit. So just encourage all of our community to come out for that event.
Okay, Amber, thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.
That's the superintendent of Park City Schools, Amber Conley. It's the local news hour on KPCW. It's 8:32. It's 8:33. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW local news hour. Well, as we reported, 8 Wasatch County property owners have sent off a letter to the Wasatch County Council and county attorney asking the council to hold off on adopting an ordinance and general plan amendment until the issue can be investigated further. Two of those who signed the letter, Silva Vagardis and Marilyn Crinton, join me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Sybil, do you want to start? I mean, you might have different reasons, Marilyn, but we'll start with you, Sybil. Why did you write the letter?
Well, I believed it was important to the issue of what's the future of Wasatch County, and I think it is tied, and thank you for having us here. It's tied to Summit County as well, especially to Park City. With the expansion of Deer Valley, we want Wasatch County to stay a special place. And what we're concerned about are changes to the general plan that the county council is currently considering. And we believe that they should stick to the guns and say the county needs to follow the general plan, not allow exceptions, and not allow mass development. We want Wasatch County to be special as Park City is, for the tourists coming to Deer Valley.
Yeah, and how about for you, Marilyn?
Likewise, when I got involved with watching what was going on with county council, my biggest concern was that they were not listening to the voice of the people. In 2016, in a supermajority, more than a supermajority, there were 74% of the people who voted to keep the density at one house per 20, which they wanted to go to one house to 10. The people want that open space, and I'm very concerned about the fact that the county council is not listening to that voice of the people.
Yeah, so have you had any response to the letter?
We have not had any response. No written response.
Right. And will it be discussed? I had heard that the county council may possibly discuss this at Wednesday's meeting. I haven't seen an agenda.
That is our understanding, is that it will be on Wednesday. The agenda doesn't have to be out until 24 hours before the meeting. So we won't know that exactly until then.
Yeah, the letter itself enumerates about 5 different reasons why they should reconsider. I mean, I think the biggest one is that you say it's like you guys got to follow your own process. And this was interesting to me. I'd never heard this, that the general plan can only be amended once a year and only in November. So really, if they were to follow process, anything couldn't happen until November, yeah?
Correct.
So why is that? Do you know?
Why is it that they've
only that you can only amend the plan once a year?
Well, I think that that's good reason for being able to put it in 1 month, any amendments to that plan, so that the citizens can know what's going to be happening to the valley and that plan. So putting it in a month that they can plan on, as I mentioned, you can only know about a meeting that's going to be on the agenda 24 hours before. So if you know that there's going to be certain planning done and changes done in 1 month, then the people can be more involved and can know about that.
Yeah. We had heard that it makes sense to move this boundary in particular, that this was originally just arbitrary, and that the new boundary would make more sense. I mean, why wouldn't you want that to happen?
Well, and I think there is a lack of history about that, but there was logic behind the boundary that is currently in place. It was not really just arbitrary. It may look arbitrary on a map, but there are water issues with that parcel, and it fit better with the parcel where it was connected, as opposed to being having an exception made and moving it. What we're most concerned about is the slippery slope and the domino effect. If you make an exception for this parcel, you pull it out of the area where it is, connect it to the other area where you can have higher density, the next landowner is going to ask for the same thing. You've set a precedent, you've created a legal right, and you basically have said, we will make exceptions to the general plan, we will make them and change the general plan for all intents and purposes outside of our own designated time frame of November. So you let the issue go. You let the general plan go. And I wonder where the county attorney is on this. I understand the county attorney was at the meeting. I attended the meeting. We really didn't hear from the county attorney, and it concerned me. In fact, I stood up and commented, even though this was not the issue I was attending the meeting to address. I cited my experience with the Summit County Planning Commission. Jamie Bracken, our county attorney at the time, was very helpful, very outspoken, and she delineated for the members of the Planning Commission, as well as, I'm sure, the county council on issues of law and the impact of making certain changes.
Yeah. And I guess it just makes me wonder, it's like, were they just hoping this kind of flew under the radar?
Well, I think it was a little bit of bootstrapping. You know, if they change where this parcel connects, if they take it out of North Fields, for example, and move it to a different area, if I've got that correct, if they change that connection to a different type of zoning and then they change the density, they've done it in a two-step process, really, but within a single petition, and it just allows the next group to do the exact same thing.
The first proposal came to them as just doing a zoning change. And I'm not completely clear as to why the council decided to take it from a request of a zoning change to change our general plan and to change the boundaries in the general plan. There's a lot of misconception of using the terms of Northfield and Central Zoning Plan. They want to say Northfield is just what's on the other side of Midway Lane. Well, Central Zoning Plan does include the Northfields, but it also includes some on the south end of that Midway Lane, which is where this parcel is. And that is, I'd just like to clarify also, those are wetlands, and that's why that boundary was that way, was the wetlands. And so to just change it thinking that, oh, it's not a big deal, it really is, because it's still addressing that environmental issue.
Yeah, but just because somebody would have the right, if this was approved, to build the 5 units, it doesn't mean that they could because of the wetlands, no? I mean, wouldn't that stop the development?
It should, but if it gets zoned at the RA5, then they would be able to build on them.
So what happened earlier this year then? I guess that's where I'm confused, because it sounds like a vote was taken, and that was to consider, or did the county council actually approve something?
They approved this.
Change the general plan.
Not okay. The zone. That was not, the zoning has not been addressed yet, but the general plan, the boundary of the general plan.
All right, and with the stipulation that would happen in November, or that wasn't that. They basically have ruled on the fact that the general plan can be changed in April.
And I think what their logic was is they were approving a proposal. Maybe they didn't think about the fact that they were changing the general plan. Someone should have said this is tantamount to changing the general plan. And we're not here to point fingers at anyone. I think the planning department in Wasatch County, run by Doug Smith, is exceptional. I think they're terrific. In fact, they cited some very specific reasons as to, from the general plan, as to why it was important to keep things the same.
We have some here we can read to you that's right out of the general plan. As a matter of public policy, the central planning area is to be maintained in its historical land use pattern and of open meadows and river and small streams riparian habitat. Another one, this area's scenic value, this is a very important one in my opinion, this area's scenic value contributes significantly to the real value of all land within the Heber Valley area. These are straight out of our general plan. These points were given to the council when this consideration was made. There's a couple of more here. Land within the central planning area has been identified as having a public benefit as open space. The preservation of open space in the central planning area will also provide for a desirable green belt separation between Heber and Midway. Those are very important points in which I think, just to say again, in 2016, the majority of the people in the valley want these things and stand for these things.
I thought it was interesting also just the fact that why would the county council, who has just formed this open space advisory board and approved up to a $15 million bond to go on November's ballot, why would they be interested in increasing the density? I mean, that just makes the property that much more expensive, no, if you in fact wanted to buy it.
Well, and I just believe maybe, and can you tell I'm stammering? Because I think that they simply didn't consider all the ramifications of this and the unintended consequences. I think ultimately it brings down the value of the whole county and especially of that area. And it will impact the views, definitely the views as well as the environment. And we're concerned about the other unintended impacts. It will change the need for county services. We ran into that in Summit County with the need for a new landfill. Things that people don't think about but should.
Okay. So again, the last we've heard is that the county council may consider this at their meeting 4 o'clock on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anything else you two wanted to add?
Well, I will mention that there was a push for this issue to be a referendum in the fall. And I think that would be sort of the fallback position. But what we're really hoping is that the general plan will be followed and that this will not be permitted, that they will stand strong. And other communities have done it successfully. And once you let it go, you let it go.
We just hope that they will recognize that by doing this, I think they feel like they've got a line that they can hold to. But it just won't happen. Precedents will take place, and if they don't adhere to having someone else give them someone else comes and says, I want that same thing you've given to this person and making a boundary change, it's just going to snowball. We'll end up being piecemealed. That whole area will end up being piecemealed just like it is in so many other cities that don't look good. Take, for instance, Orem. We just do not want that to look like, we don't want it destroyed. It's a beautiful valley. We want to keep it beautiful.
Okay. Marilyn and Sybil, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. It's 8:45 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Camas Valley Business Association recently celebrated its inaugural year. On the phone to tell us what the group is up to and what their plans are, I have the president of the organization, Eileen Dunn. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. So the association, I think it kicked off a year ago. So you've been meeting in that year?
Right. It basically last year or 2017-18 was basically our founding year, and we're finishing that year up this June. And we had our first inaugural annual meeting on March 28th, and it was great. So this last year, we've basically been articles in corporation, you know, developing our strategic structure, getting basically all our ducks in a row. To make some impact into the future.
Yeah. So in terms of where you are, I mean, you're, it's a membership-based organization, right?
Correct. It's a membership-based organization, and we have a partnership with, thank goodness, the Park City Summit County Chamber Bureau. And through that relationship, if you become a member of the Camas Valley Business Association, you get all the benefits and become a member of the Park City Chamber, and vice versa. If you become a member of the Park City Chamber and you're within our valley mapped area, Wanship to Woodland, then you become a member to the Camas Valley Business Association. So it's a great partnership, and we're really grateful for all the help, guidance that Bill and the rest of the staff over at the chamber gave us to get this really going well.
What's the response been then?
It's been great. Once everyone found out what we're all about, you know, because everybody's like, what's going on? And in the valley, we just want to make sure that people understand that we are a valley association from Camas to Woodland. Our economic future is different than what Park City's future may be, and we want to honor our valley. Valley heritage and the beauty of it while assisting and promoting our collective economic growth. But however, let people know that we are not Park City, and not that Park City isn't wonderful and brings a lot of economic value to the Camas Valley, but we are different. And I think that kind of scared people off, like for instance, maybe the Camas Valley Business Association wanted to be like Park City. No, we value everything that Park City has given to our valley, but we're different, and we know that there will be a lot of growth out here. So we kind of want to be an advocate for our community.
Yeah. So I mean, what do you see as the purpose then of the association?
The purpose is to, again, honor our valley's heritage while assisting in promoting our collective economic growth. And we have a lot of hats in the ring. We want to bring more to see what that is. And as a collective group, you know, be a part of the municipalities and the county and the state to see what's going on that might affect us economically. We basically are still looking for talented, diverse board of directors to join us. We have different committees to help us get to the goals, which we are still figuring out exactly what priorities we want to make impact that may benefit all. For instance, we have a marketing public relations committee. We have a technology committee. We have a corridor preservation beautification committee. We have an events committee. And, of course, our membership and education committee. So basically bringing help to all businesses.
Yeah. So as an association, will you be able to apply for and receive grant dollars from the State Tourism Marketing Fund?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Of course, we didn't do anything this year in our founding year, but we definitely plan on going after federal, state, and county grants for different things. And, of course, there has to be value and stakeholders involved with all those.
So how many members do you have at this point? And then, I mean, what's the potential for members?
Well, there's about six. It's unbelievable. When we first started this, we did research and got all the lists from the businesses and the cities and from the county. There's over 600 businesses in the valley. And we're talking from the person that has a home office that's doing financial consulting to the dog walker, to the hairstylist, to a law firm that is, has several states. So to kind of get all this together on a collective voice. So our goal is to add 20 a year. We actually had over 175 people show up to our March annual meeting, which is a great turnout for the Valley for any type of organization, actually. So we exceeded our goal in that. And then 25 new members joined or committed to join that day. So now we have, if they have already signed in and joined, we have 85 members already. So 85 businesses, which we think is great. We started with about 30, and now we're up to 85. And our next full membership quarterly meeting is June 21st, Thursday morning. It'll be like a continental breakfast.
Okay. So, if people are interested, how do they get involved or how do they join?
They can get on the Camas Valley Business Association website, just look them up, or the Park City Chamber website, and there is an area there to join. And please join. They can contact any of the board. They can just look on the website to see who's involved. And we would love volunteers, board members, people that want to join our committees to really make an impact and have a voice.
Okay. Hey, Eileen, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you so much, Leslie. Have a great day.
It's 8:53, good morning. Well, last week, federal officials gave the go-ahead to a new master plan for Alta Ski Resort that includes a tram and also a proposal to land helicopters on the Lone Peak and Tipinogos wilderness areas. The environmental group Save Our Canyons, however, thinks both are bad decisions. On the phone to tell us why, I have Policy Director Rob DeBerk. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Let's start with the proposed new Mount Baldy tram. Why does Save Our Canyons think this is a bad idea?
Yeah, we're really concerned with this proposed Mount Baldy tram. Mount Baldy is, you know, one of the most iconic peaks in the Wasatch, and we don't want to see a tram up there. It's a place where for decades people have hiked this Mount Baldy peak, so they can, you know, they're earning their turns to go down the Baldy chutes, and this is really, you know, one of the most like sterling runs in the Wasatch people can do. It's something that our membership has come to us and they said, when they first saw this Alta proposal, they said, do everything you can to stop this. We don't want to see a tram at Baldy Summit. So we're against it for that reason. Another concern we have is we met with Alta last Halloween. We had a meeting showing our concern for this. And what we asked Alta was, if you build a tram up to the peak of Baldy, what are you going to do in the future to Baldy? Once you start with this kind of infrastructure up there, what are we going to see next? Are we going to see warming huts? Are we going to see restrooms? Is there the possibility that we're going to see the same kind of conference and restaurant space that we now see on top of Hidden Peak, just down canyon at Snowbird? And, you know, to our question, Alta said, we refuse to limit ourselves. We may see these things in the future. We're not going to limit ourselves in any way by saying we won't seek additional infrastructure up there. So we really see this tram up Baldy is just the first step towards greater infrastructure up Mount Baldy.
Yeah, and I'm guessing you've already had plenty of time to make your views known. So at this point, since a decision has been made, is it too late?
Yeah, so the Forest Service came out with their decision. We, you know, registered our objections to the master plan when it was first unveiled. Our members registered their objections. I think we had, you know, upwards of 300 people write in and say they wanted to see the Forest Service say no to this plan to put a tram up to top of Baldy. Forest Service came out with a decision last week and said, you know, we're going to allow this. And so now our only option is to file an administrative objection. We have 45 days to do that, so right around Memorial Day. And we're definitely going to be doing that. If folks are interested, we're going to be having a meeting about moving forward, a public meeting about moving forward and how to oppose Alta in this effort. And that's going to be taking place Tuesday, April 24th from 6 until 8 p.m. at Wasatch Touring in Salt Lake City. That's at 702 East, 100 South. If folks are interested in joining us and learning more about how to stop this tram from going up Baldy.
Okay. Also, last week, the U.S. Forest Service decided that landing helicopters in the Lone Peak area and the Tipinogos wilderness areas is appropriate. Will you identify the location of this?
Yeah, so they didn't specify locations. They said it was going to be, you know, possibly in the three different wilderness areas making up, you know, parts of the Wasatch. And so this would be Twin Peaks, Mount Olympus, Lone Peak area. Twin Peaks, Lone Peak, and Mount Tipinogos areas they identified. They didn't go into specific landing site.
So is this for skiing only, or is it for sightseeing? Is it all of the above?
Yeah, so this is a study that was, part of a study that was proposed by the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources. So they say that in past years, they've seen some of these mountain goat herds start to diminish in numbers. They're concerned about that, and they want to move forward and study why this may be happening by using helicopters to go in and trap these mountain goats and collar them. And so we don't have an issue with their doing that study. We think it's a fine idea. We're interested as to why this may be happening. But we think that we shouldn't be moving forward with this study by circumventing the protections of the Wilderness Act. If they want to do this, they should move forward and use horseback to get in. They should hike to get in. They shouldn't weaken the protections that were put in place by the Wilderness Act to do this.
Interesting. But again, is this a done deal?
So unfortunately, this is a done deal. We filed our objections. We've moved forward as far as we can through administrative appeals. Right now, we're deciding whether or not we want to litigate this in court. That's the only way we could stop this moving forward.
Yeah. Now, was the approval given just for a temporary use, maybe a couple of summers, so that they could just do the study, finish the study, and then be done with it?
So those are some of our unanswered questions. We don't really know what this approval means. We don't know how many future landings there will be, if there will have to be future landings to replace the collars. We don't know what kind of collars they're going to be, if they're going to be radio collars or satellite collars, if there will be additional flyovers necessary or additional landings that weren't projected in the initial plan so that they can, you know, update their findings. There's some unknowns here, and that's also part of our concern.
I think it was interesting in the email you sent out that that it'd be interesting to find out what happened to mountain goats. They're not native to the area. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, they're a non-native species. It was species that was put here in the late 60s for hunting purposes.
So,
and we really think that's why the Department of Natural Resources is concerned about the health of the herd. It's primarily for hunting, and we have no issue with hunting. But like I said earlier, we don't want to see the protections of the Wilderness Act circumvented for the interest of hunting. Once you start making, you know, small exceptions to appease one particular interest, then how do you make the argument against appeasing all these different interests that are looking for exceptions?
Okay. Just real quick, I only have about another minute. In terms of Bonanza Flat, where are you guys with that? I think you're part of one of the committees that's been formed to make recommendations
So we're part of one of the committees that's moving forward with these management plans for Bonanza Flats. And, you know, right now we're just focusing most of our efforts with Bonanza and making sure that this is kind of protected in place as it is. We don't want to see any really additional hardened sites, anything that would really promote, you know, greater, you know, we want to see use of the area, but we don't want to see this area really loved to death. So we're trying to figure out how we can make that happen with the plans moving forward.
Okay. That's all the time I have for. Thank you, Rob, for your time.
Yeah, thank you, Leslie.
Rob DeBerk is the policy director for Save Our Canyons. You can get more information at saveourcanyons.org.